I am Plunt on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. If we don't think about our names, the ones we're given, the ones we use, the ones we like and don't like, you will, after reading the new book from Mavis Hymes. The Power of Names, Uncovering the Mystery of What We Are Called, is such a fascinating book. She talks about her own name, offers clinical vignettes as well as theoretical perspectives about something that we all think about but have rarely talked about. Mavis Hymes is a psychoanalyst in Toronto, where she has a full-time private practice. She is a clinical consultant at Wellspring, a cancer center for patients and their families, and she is a director of, speaking of Lacan, Psychoanalytic Group. She joins me now, and I'll get her to tell us about what's in her book, as well as the conscious and unconscious impact our names have on our lives, how they change us, and why sometimes we change them. The website for more is at mavishymes.com. The book is published by Roman and Littlefield. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Mavis Hymes. Dr. Hymes, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me here.
So, you know, this is sort of like an AA meeting, I guess. In talking to you about your book, I guess I should just bring up my own personal experiences, and then that'll be a way for us to talk about what's in the book, you know.
Right.
My name is Joseph Planta, and so I grew
Joseph,
up...
Joseph, sorry, what's the surname pronounced?
Planta, P-L-A-N-T-A,
Planta.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I've grown up my whole life until I was about 18, 20 years old, using Joseph as my name. I don't know if I preferred that, but I guess I just always expected that. And then I got a job somewhere, and it was just easier for everyone else to call me Joe. And it took me a while to get comfortable with that. And I'm 34 now, and probably in the last 4 or 5 years, I've taken to using Joe just as much as I use Joseph.
You're actually going against the current a bit.
Is that right?
Because one tends to use a diminutive form when one's younger. And I know a number of people now who are, you know, adults in their 40s, 50s, 60s, who say, I don't want to be Sue or Susie, I want Susan. I don't want Deb or Debbie, I want Deborah.
Uh-huh.
I don't want Billy or Willie or Bill, I want William. So it's interesting that I can see why you would have shortened it just to make it easier. But I think the tendency really is to go up, you know, to go the other way.
Yeah. I mean, I use both interchangeably.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, is
that it took you a while to kind of, you were aware of that change.
Yeah, I'm still uncomfortable with my mom uses Joe, or relatives that I've known my whole life use it.
Right.
I find it almost like I'll think about it as they're saying it all the time, and I find that odd.
There's a particular relationship also within one's family and the names that one calls oneself within the family, the nicknames or the terms of affection, that usually don't go outside the family. So sometimes one hears a nickname that no one else knows.
Sure, yeah.
And there's a certain embarrassment almost.
Yeah.
Going outside of the intimacy of the family.
The other thing I was thinking about as I was reading your book, and you mentioned this, is because I interview people on this program, and I've noticed that some guests are really good at invoking my name in the course of their answer.
Yes.
And what have you found
Let me ask first, what's
sure.
your reaction?
Until I read your book, I thought it was kind of cool that they that they know who I am, or that they're making an effort to remember who they're talking to.
Yes. I think in the book I refer to people who overdo, I'm going to say overdo it. It's
sure.
one thing
yeah.
when you greet someone, you know, my name is Mavis Hymes, what's your name? And we exchange names, and then maybe in the course of a conversation just to, for inflection or to say, yes, I'm with you, I remember your name. But I think in the book I'm talking about the example of a car salesman who repeatedly uses your name as a way of creating a relationship of intimacy almost that doesn't exist, or a friendship. And what I was pointing out is somehow, sometimes that feels like a transgression. Mm. Like you're overstepping the boundaries. You don't know me that well, so stop using my name every second sentence. And when I've talked to other people, they say they have the same creepy feeling, that it's almost really a transgression, because we don't have that kind of relationship where you can keep using my name that way.
Yeah, and I've noticed that with people, like I'll expect it from guests who I've had on over the years that I know that have become friends. Mm-hmm. But I notice it a lot more when people that I've never met will have, say, been told that, just, you know, like politicians or lawyers.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. It has a kind of, we're trying to get close and I'm trying to ingratiate myself or assume a relationship that didn't develop yet. It's too fast. It's too much.
Well, what do you make of the ambivalence that a lot of us have about our names? And I guess these are just people who don't reflect on it, because I think they think that no one else thinks about it, so they don't do anything about it, or they think we can't do anything about it because it's something that we've had since we were born. Is that the case with most people, you think, that they just don't think about their names?
I think we take it for granted. It's only, and I think one of the things I was hoping with the book is that we would stop and reflect and realize the significance of our names. You know, there's the first name, which is the given name. It's a gift. It's a donato, gift given, that comes from the hopes and expectations from our parents. And then the surname carries our ancestral lineage. It's our affiliation. I'm a member of this group of people, my bloodline. This is my ancestral history. And we look at that when we look at genealogy. So I think when you say, how do people feel about their names, I think people have different set of feelings about their first and their second name. Because I think the second name often gets associated with, and I was describing this in the book, a kind of set of injunctions or prohibitions about, you know, we do this in our family, you know, pretentiously sometimes. I think in the old days, you know, the name was associated with land and territory and a badge of arm, you know, and a coat of arms and a badge and a herald, and not only royalty, but even one upper middle class, you know, strove for that as well. And I think there's some residue today of, or even not in a pretentious way, just, you know, in our family we do things this way. It could be our culture, it could be just our particular family. And some people rile against that, don't want to have that kind of that put on us, and I think we outgrow that and create our own set of, you know, prescriptions to live by. And then there's the first name that people either like or don't like. Mm-hmm. I like my name, I don't like my name, or in its extreme, I remember having a patient of mine say, I wish I had no name. I don't want to be associated with anything or anyone. Now, this is someone struggling with her family history, obviously.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I was talking about the psychological burden of the name. It can be. I think most of us wear our names with some pride, sometimes some ambivalence. But no matter what, we have some affect associated with it.
Yeah, and if it affects someone so, they mm-hmm. decide to change it. I was reading in the paper this past weekend about Nancy Ruth, the senator from Ontario. She was born a Jackman, mm-hmm. and she decided to not use the surname and just use her first and middle name as her name.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a contemporary name change, because that was her own volition, her own choice to do that.
Right.
What have you found in terms of people changing their names today? Because, I mean, there isn't a Hitler nowadays that's forcing people to do that. So they largely do it because of business or...
Right, right. So there's several categories, you could say. You know, there are people who, well, women often change their name for marriage. That's a given. Mm-hmm. I mean, not so much a given anymore, but that's not unusual. There are people who are adopted and they change names. Many celebrities, artists, writers, people in the public eye change their name, maybe like the senator, because they want a name that's got more appeal, more has a certain resonance or sound to it, or is associated with strength, with something powerful, more powerful than what their original name is. And then the people who change their name because of some really difficult family situation where the weight of the name is, they can't bear the weight of the name. So here I'm thinking of sexual abuse, physical abuse, something, some really awful circumstance, or a family member who's committed some horrific crime. I mean, in the extreme, we think of the children of, you know, the Nazis who struggled with carrying those names. I just read a biography of Stalin's daughter who changed her name when she got married, and several times, in fact.
Yeah.
So there, but I think in contemporary, we do, it's less often that people change their name, given that one is legally in Canada. I believe in the U.S., we're allowed to change names. There's no law that says you can't, in Canada, change a name. Oh, yeah, I'm speaking to you in Canada, right,
in
Vancouver. So there's no law that says we can't change our name unless it's a name like And or something really, you know, or a number. You can't call yourself by a number. There are very few stipulations about that.
I always thought growing up that kids at a certain age should choose their own names. I mean, did you find that, has that been your experience in terms
not
of...
Not at all.
No?
Not at all. I think maybe they choose to change their name, but it's not as common as one would think to change one's first name. I think one only does it if it's a really awful-sounding name or...
Yeah.
And parents put a lot of thought into naming their children. You know, there's so many books and so many conversations and so much that happens around deciding what to name a child because, as one woman said to me, it's such a huge responsibility. My child is going to have to wear this name for the rest of their lives. It is a decision.
You talk in the book about these various naming ceremonies and what they involve. Some of them can be quite elaborate.
Mm-hmm. I think we see it less today in Western culture, but I think when we move into smaller, you know, communities or different First Nations or African culture or other tribal cultures, we see the residue, even today, people carrying a secular name for the Western world and having these old traditions, another name of their own culture that's often associated with some very beautiful and elaborate ceremonies. Mm-hmm. That's a way of connecting with the ancestors.
Right.
That somehow there's some notion that we are connected to our past and that and our tribe and our clan, and that we pay homage to that, and the naming ceremony carries some of that. It's kind of the notion that a long, long, long time ago, that names, there was power associated, a kind of essential power associated with our name. So to know the name of someone was to acquire their power, so there was a mystery associated with the name. You know, there's an old superstition still in Judaism, and I'm Jewish, and that when someone is sick, sometimes there's a ceremony performed by a rabbi to change the name, as if one can fool the angel of death. So instead of taking Johnny, if we change Johnny's name to Martin or something else, then the angel of death will be fooled. And I met a gentleman who, that in fact, it's referenced in the book, that happened, and he wouldn't tell me the name. He said it's still, was still very secretive.
Yeah.
So we you know, these traces of superstition and a time when we spoke about ancestors, the ancestors, in a kind of tribal way.
Your own name, which you talk about in the book, is fascinating. Let's take your first name first.
Mavis,
yeah. What did you learn growing up in terms of what that meant?
Well, I knew that my name, being Jewish, I knew that was my English name, my English-speaking sounding name, and that I had a Hebrew name. And often we take, the Hebrew name is often named after a relative. In my case, it was my grandmother's sister, who was Malka. So my Hebrew name was Malka. And then what's common is to take the first initial, M, and use that for an English name. And my mother apparently loved the name Mavis, which is not very common, certainly not among Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, she chose that name, which is a kind of songbird. My Hebrew name, Malka, means queen. And then my surname, Himes, my father was one of nine siblings, and there were seven brothers and two sisters, and the seven brothers decided growing up or in the 40s in Montreal, where there was still a lot of anti-Semitism, and there was the Anglophone-Francophone tension, they decided to anglicize their name and shorten it to take away the ethnic Jewish-sounding part of it. So Haimovich became Himes.
Yeah,
That was part of, you know, that was one of the reasons people asked me, why did I write this book? There was some interest in that. What happened to those missing letters, and how did they get transmitted to me? And what was the impact of that? Because I think when one tampers with the letters of the name or changes the name, that it leaves some residue or trace. And I'm speaking now as a psychoanalyst, that things are inscribed in our psyche, and when we change things, there's always a residue. It's not a bad or good thing, but it's something it leaves us with something to think about or to ponder or question.
And to talk about. I mean, does that then define how you view your life henceforth?
Sorry, was that a question?
Yeah.
Does that define? I think often it can, because I take that back. I'm going to say in some cases, because
right.
I really think, and I work very much with the singular in particular. Not a sociologist. I don't think in groups. I think in individuals and the singularity and particularity of each person. So I think for some people, the name can be an issue. For some people, changing letters of the name and eliminating letters, depending on the purpose. So I think in my family's case, there was a sense of erasure and concealment. And I think when you try and conceal something, it outs somewhere else. And so for me, you could say in my own particular case, part of my Jewish identity was very hidden. And I think there was something about that that I think stayed with me. And so outwardly, my husband's not Jewish. My name doesn't, when people meet me, Mavis Himes, doesn't sound very particularly Jewish,
yeah.
And yet there is something about me that's a strong part of my identity, but it's concealed. And so it's that kind of tension that I became aware of.
You mentioned a moment ago about the meaning of Mavis,
songbird.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then your Hebrew name meaning queen. When you're given these names, do you think whoever gives them to you, your parents obviously, that they feel that you ought to fulfill what they mean?
I think in my case, I don't. I can say honestly, I don't think that's the case. I don't think there were. Malka was, as I say, because it was my great aunt's name, it was simply, you know, naming someone. It's very common after someone who's deceased. In fact, my real name, now, I don't mention this, is Carol Mavis, because my mother says it was an error on the birth certificate that, in fact, Carol got listed as my first name. So the middle name, being named after a deceased relative, is very common in many cultures and
right.
groups. So I don't think it was, it I don't think they intended me for, to be regal or, you know, anything of that sort. But I think there are many cases where, and I think it's often the first name has to do with the expectations, hopes, desires, wishes of one's parents for one's child. So I hope my daughter will be as beautiful as Marilyn Monroe or Elizabeth Taylor, or I'm dating myself here, or William, you know, may he be as prolific as William Shakespeare or as artistic as, you know, whoever. And so I think there it's said half in jest or half in, you know, I like this name or I like this particular artist or creator, so I'm going to use that name. But I think sometimes there is implicit, it seeps in there, that expectation. And one of the themes of the book is that our name is a house that we're given. It's one of the few things that one doesn't choose in one's life. We don't choose our name. We're given a first name, we inherit a second name. And that it's a house that we need to make our home. And that one has to inhabit it and make it really one's own, shedding some of those expectations and hopes, and that one develops one's own hopes and desires for oneself, that one creates a name for oneself, or that one inhabits one's name fully, you know, that that becomes so much part of us, and that we make it our own.
Now, unfortunately, we judge people by their names, and others may look at a name when considering applicants for jobs or housing or school, those sorts of judgments. What's a way to get away from that, or are we stuck with that, say, that sort of prejudice?
It's pretty tricky. No matter, even if you're looking at a list of authors or any list, credits on a, you know, a movie, or let alone applicants, job and university applicants, you know, you see a list of names, and it almost it's second nature that O'Reilly, you know, the Muck, the Scottish names, the Wongs and Sungs, the Oriental names, the Chinese, Japanese. And today, Mohammed, El Jazeer, El, you know, we immediately know we're talking Muslim, and we unconsciously make those assumptions about a person, so that when we meet someone named Melinda Wong, and a Caucasian person walks in, and we're expecting to see someone who's Oriental, and it's so second nature. And in today's climate, I think it's we're back to a very scary period, because Canada is a country of immigrants and refugees. And, you know, I'm happy to be here and not in the States right now, where the names are, you know, the ethnic-sounding names really are problematic.
Yeah.
And I wonder if there's going to be a lot of name changing. In the past, it was to erase some of the you know, Russian, Ukrainian, Latin, East European, to make it Polish, to make it easier sounding and to, you know, be more in a melting pot situation. But today, carrying Arabic or Muslim sounding names, I think it's really an issue.
Yeah. You end the book with the scene of you and your granddaughter walking in Costa Rica. She studies and practices Waldorf teaching.
Yes.
What is that?
Waldorf is a system of education. It's a very organic, has a spiritual side to it, in which things happen naturally, developmentally, and you don't use manufactured toys. You use handmade toys, for example. It has a hippie component,
yeah,
kind of throwback a little bit, but based on a very strong anthroposophical, philosophical position. And, started in Germany.
Yeah, and so we talked about your ancestors, and I think it's good to talk about your descendants now. She explained to you a way to understand her names a little bit better. What did she tell you?
She said that in the Waldorf school there's something called eurythmics, and that you can dance your name. Each letter can be expressed through motion, and children in the Waldorf system learn how to dance their name. And I think it's such a beautiful image and metaphor to kind of celebrate who you are by taking those letters and expressing them in some movement, beautiful dance way. Yes.
Yeah, it's a great way to ponder our names as well.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I probably won't get up and do anything physical in terms of my name, it's a marvelous way to think about it. And I thought it was a delightful way in terms of how you ended your book.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, I enjoyed this book a great deal. Congratulations on it and continued good luck with it. And thanks for your time today, Dr. Himes.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a delight.
You're very welcome. MavisHimes.com is the website. The book is called The Power of Names, Uncovering the Mystery of What We Are Called. Roman and Littlefield is its publisher. Its author, Dr. Mavis Himes, joined me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Lanto.